The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
One number puts into perfect view what has not been happening in this SEC locale. Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday. Hope everybody is having a great day. Wherever it is you are, we're going to talk college football for the next couple hours. Y'all hang out with us. I said one number. One number associated with the Florida Gators football program. One number associated with the Florida Gators football program that normally makes it stand out in a pretty impressive way. That will absolutely not be the case coming up in about a week. Florida football has announced that its annual pro day will be March 21st at the football complex. There will be 7 draft eligible players scheduled to work out for NFL scouts. Now, we all know that when a coach gets hired, for instance, a new head coach at South Carolina, it might not be that Irmo High School is at the absolute top of its game right now, but you still go by Irmo and say hey to the coach and, you know, wave to the kids and do whatever you can and within the bounds of the rules. Whether it's local or whether it's a giant program somewhere else in the state, if you're the head coach, you got to keep the relationships there, whether there's a player in that year's class or not. If you're the Auburn head coach, you go to every high school in Mobile. You go to every high school in Huntsville. You go to Prattville. You go to Bruton. Wherever you go. Bruton, a tiny place. There's no kids in Bruton, but there might be in 3 years. So, yeah. You make the trip even when there's not that much of a draw. When I say one number puts into focus what has not been happening in this SEC locale the past 2 years specifically, one number puts into focus, clear view, what hasn't been happening in Gainesville under Billy Napier's watch the past couple of years. They haven't been bringing NFL players through that program. Not a lot of them, not enough of them. And the bottom line is you play in the SEC. You need NFL players if you're going to win. There is no context for what I'm about to tell you. When you're playing in the SEC, you need NFL players or you're just not going to win. Florida announced that its annual pro day will be March 21st. They're on campus at the football complex. 7 current or former Florida players are scheduled to appear. Now, because it's Florida, all the pro teams will be there. It's just kind of what you do because you keep that relationship. When I tell you the details behind the 7 current or former players, I'm going to put into pretty clear view that Florida struggles on the field, a direct result of not having good enough players. Now, there's an organizational thing here as well, and not having good enough players, some of that's organizational through name, image, likeness. Some of that's organizational through, like, you're not going to have ETN this fall. Do you know why? Because your head coach wouldn't play him enough. Like, that was a decision. ETN was plenty good enough. He's not there anymore. That's what I'm saying. 7 for a pro day? But it's Florida, so we'll show up anyway. When you look at the details, holy smokes, folks. The headliner, and I mean by far, wide receiver Ricky Pearsall, who he transferred over from Arizona State, and I mean you snapped your fingers like, all right, that might be the best receiver on the team. He may be the most consistent. He's not perfect. But he also didn't have perfect quarterback play around him, blah, 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 all of this other stuff. That guy's an NFL player, and he gets after it. He's got dog in him. Like, he's a really, really good ball player. He is a projected second to third round pick. And I look at him play, I'm like, all right, for whatever I know, I get that. I think he can get open on an NFL field, and he'll catch the ball, and he can run away from some people. So I like all that. And I dare say, when second or third round pick, when we talk about that for any players, like, all right, well, that's a really well regarded kid. If you look at how deep the wide receiver class is for this draft, wowzers. Being a third round pick as a wide receiver, like a lot of wide receivers already get picked, man. This is a good bunch of receivers, and so to be a day two pick is a pretty good commentary. So, not only did he show up and was like, all right, I'm ready to roll. And Anthony Richardson's like, all right, I like this guy. And then Graham Mertz, same thing. Not only all that, but he went down to Mobile, Alabama, and in what became a showcase sort of for receivers, Ladd McConkey, McCaffrey, he blew things up down yonder, and then strong performance at the combine. And so he's probably, I would say, anyway, I'm just going to tell you, 50 to 75. It's a guess. He was there 2 years. They threw the ball plenty. He led the team in receiving 2 years. Like, he did it. For an SEC team that not always had everything in, you know, going in their favor. It's like, oh, hey, yeah, they're about to throw the ball. Let's go nickel or dime. And he still put up good numbers. If Ricky Pearsall was sort of in the mix for Pro Day at Florida, well, that would be sort of a normal day, and he's a day two pick. Florida Gators in the NFL draft, that's a regular and recurring thing and has been for decades, even before they really got good, which they permanently got good. We didn't know it at the time, but that Galen Hall, Kerwin Bell thing, it's like, well, hey, this is exciting. And then there was a little bit of dip, but then Steve Spurrier came and you realize, no. Beginning about 80, 81, 82 with Charlie Pell, we're good now. We're Florida and we're good. Well, they're not. They're average and they're expensive and they're pretty well financed and they're bloated. And Billy Napier and then everything off of that, like Billy Napier as an entity, Billy Napier and his staff, his program, his process, his systems have not been bringing NFL players into this program. Other players at the Florida Pro Day, Kingsley Egwuakun, did I pronounce that? He started 30 games, and it's like Nico. Kingsley. So he's not the biggest kid in the world, but he's a plugger, and he tries hard, and you start 30 games, that's not nothing. So, he played a lot of football. NFL.com, and I'm just going for people who should know, the second most accomplished pro day candidate at Florida is the guy who actually did play for Florida a lot. So, there's that, and I'll get to more of that in a second. Prospect grade is a 5.64. The commentary is he's a candidate for the bottom of the roster or the practice squad. He's number two. There is then tackle Lindell Hudson. And if you don't know Lindell Hudson, he was at FIU. He made two starts at Florida a year ago. There is not a lot of feedback. For instance, like at NFL.com, you can find Ricky Pearsall. You can find Kingsley. You can't find Lindell Hudson there. You can find him on a couple of other more, say, remote draft sites. One ranking, not mine, someone else's, has him listed as the 65th best offensive tackle in this year's draft. That's two full rounds of draft picks, nothing but offensive tackles. Lindell Hudson's not getting drafted. He will be at the pro day. Griffin McDowell, offensive tackle of late Tennessee Chattanooga. He's a big one. But he is going to appear at the pro day as well. And a lot of these names are either current Florida players or guys who were there previously and transferred out, and maybe your school, because I go to Tennessee Martin now, and of course pro scouts aren't, so you latch on with someone else. And so if you have a relationship with anybody else, and your school isn't going to host a pro day, and if they did, no one would really pay attention. If that is the case, then you latch on somewhere. And so that's kind of what we see here. When you look at the rest of the participants, you got a punter, and well and good for the punter, but that's not Jacob Watkins. He's going to be at the pro day. He's going to kick. There is a quarterback who will be working out as well, Micah Leon, and he's a transfer from UConn and NC State, who he had some snaps there, but he also will be at pro day. I think, for instance, the reason Micah Leon is at pro day really is to throw routes to Ricky Pearsall. I think part of what Jacob Watkins would love for the Bears or the Patriots or the Chargers to see him kick and go, maybe a seventh-round pick, or we'll throw him a free agent bone. I don't know. Maybe he's there to let Ricky Pearsall field punts. That's what I think. Eddie Battle, running back. He'll be that. Folks, this is Florida's pro day after 2 years and 3 months with Billy Napier in charge. There is no context for this. And understand that every word I'm saying is coming from somebody who likes Billy Napier on a personal level. That's irrelevant. I'm sure he doesn't care. I state it to say that I got no axe to grind. It's not like I used to have season tickets, and then because of him, they changed the policy, and I lost all my Gator points. And I like him as a coach. I know he's a good coach. This has been a disorganized mess. When he arrived, he was given an unlimited budget. He exceeded it. I think the number I saw recently was 107 kids playing football, 140 off-field personnel for the football team. Again, there's no context for this. When you hear him talk, and I mean like Tuesday, yesterday, this week, you hear him talk, this does not sound like a guy now entering year three. It sounds like someone taking over a disastrous program. For a guy who says, I pay attention to detail more than anybody else. In fact, what I do better than anything I do is pay attention to detail. And I'm going to have the most analyst and the quote, we've made changes on the staff, and certainly we've added some really good pieces. Now, we also return a ton of production at all three levels as well, so I think it's a combination of experience, some new leadership, some new voices there, and I think a little bit better detail, discipline, accountability. I think we got players that are taking on blah, blah, blah. What have you been doing for 2 years? He made comments about the new coaching staff and taking some things off his plate. And I'm thinking, well, for 2 years, you've had the same number of coaches and you've had more than 100 off-field personnel. How now, 2 years and 3 months into your tenure, are we taking things off your plate? And by the way, if you had more than 100 folks on the payroll and there was still too much on your plate the past 2 years, what were all these people doing? What were they doing to earn their paycheck? The 15th and the 30th, they checked direct deposit. It was there, but you had too much on your plate? When you look at the pro day, the number is just ghastly. When you look at the context behind it and the fact that we're not talking about even like a Missouri program, for instance, we're talking about the Florida Gators. The lack of organization for someone who continuously talks about how detail-oriented it is. And he's talking about how now, 2 years and 3 months in, quote, the system, the processes, the structure, they're all in place now. They're all mine. What were they? Like, this is all on you. And a lot of this sounds like you were saying a year ago. So keep rolling, Billy. Spring practice is going. You've got a game coming up. There's some portal time, whatever. But there are some just serious fundamental issues here, and I'm not talking about even like things like tackling. I'm talking about organizational, off-field, structured, the very processes, the systems that you say are now in place. What about you didn't have them in place till now? My goodness. We're going to take a break. We'll jump into it next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Thursday. Big lineup guest. Speaking of Gators, and I was, Graham Hall, Swamp 247. We're going to talk about, for instance, Russ Callaway being promoted to the co-OC. Napier's still going to call plays, I think, which is interesting. I wasn't railing on Napier. I was just reporting events that have already occurred beyond dispute and then his most recent comments. So we're going to talk, for instance, the new co-OC, but I'm still going to call plays. Napier said, among other things, I was talking about a system, processes, and structure. They finally have a system in place for name, image, likeness, and his words, where I'm not having to deal with this 24/7, 365. Says this allows, quote, some personnel evaluations to be taken off my plate. What were all these people doing? Talked about Ron Roberts in particular. Will help from a delegation standpoint. That he would, quote, hand off some tasks on offense as well to Russ Callaway, but I'm still going to call plays. So I don't know what the most blown out assistant off-field staff in college football was doing, but Billy Napier apparently up until last week was still doing more than he had time for. So we'll talk about all of that with Graham. Hour two, a little Texas A&M talk, gigging 247. Jeff Tarpley going to join us. And then bottom of hour two, good friend of ours from the Fourth and Wrong podcast, Chris Marler. We know him from various places covering SEC, and we'll talk Southeastern Conference football with him. If you hadn't seen, I'm just going to report a little bit of news here. The NCAA has said until a current active lawsuit, pending lawsuit, in the state of West Virginia is settled, until that happens, if you're an underclassman, you do not have your diploma yet, until this lawsuit from the state of West Virginia is settled, if you're an undergraduate, go ahead, transfer as long as you want, as many times as you want. Go ahead and transfer three times, four, whatever you want to do. Amid the portal, the NCAA said, for undergrads, you now have to submit a waiver for the second transfer. Not the first one, the second one. And first one, do it on your own. Second one, you got to submit a waiver. And we're going to start getting tighter on the we have all the list of requirements here, and we have to have a line somewhere. Well, there are people who wanted to transfer a second or third time, and, well, my details are different, and so I should be allowed to play. And the NCAA is like, we got to have some rules. No rules. And so places like North Carolina and head coach Mac Brown, NCAA, no rules. We want no rules on transfers. Well, guess what, Mac Brown and others? You just got no rules on transfers. That is as of right now. I did say this lawsuit taking place in West Virginia, this lawsuit, as long as it's pending, as long as it's open, as long as it's still being decided, the NCAA is like, as long as that's the case, you transfer whatever, however many times you want to. This lawsuit is scheduled to begin in June of 2025. It's March 14th, 2024. It's not like this is on the May docket at the courthouse downtown. Wheeling, West Virginia. Jury trial, June 25. It's the wild, folks. Mac Brown, you wanted it for Tez Walker. Well, you got it for everybody now. You want to transfer? Knock yourself out. Now, good news for instance, the ACC big picture, I think this year, good news, is landmines and more are actually developing. Now, that is it's a measured amount of good news because under the heading of, boy, didn't know how good we had it, we're tired of being a one-team conference. We want someone, translation, more than Clemson to be a contender for the playoffs and a national championship, and that was supposed to be Florida State. Well, Florida State held up their end, but the wins, they do come from somewhere, and among the places Florida State got their wins was Clemson. The idea was a 12-0 and an 11-1, and there are these big monsters, and at some point Miami will come along, and then our three biggest brands, yo, we'll be rolling. And that has never, ever, ever, ever happened. It's the whole reason Florida State and Miami were split into different divisions back in whatever that was, 05 or 06, whenever Miami joined. We have one really super marquee game. Bowden was still at Clemson. That wasn't one super national marquee game, Florida State and Miami. We have one all year. Maybe we can get to play twice a year. Never happened. So Florida State, they rebounded. Now we're just all lined up, you know, one through the bottom. And Clemson, Dabo swears, is going to do this. Just a little bit of a dip. Maybe he was right. When I say we have landmines and more developing, being a one-team conference, it clearly didn't work for the ACC because they lost all manner of their standing and reputation and panache and cachet and all of that. Well, Louisville being that next team, and NC State being the most consistent winner, honestly, outside of whichever team has bounced up to one, Clemson and now Florida State, NC State's been the most consistent winning 7, 8, 9, like they're decent enough, in the entire conference. Virginia Tech fell off. North Carolina's way underachieved. Miami? No. So up and down the conference, you have Georgia Tech emerging. You have Virginia Tech emerging again. Duke's better. But that's not how a conference rebounds or gets carried along, and that's the tough news.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford, we are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
October 15th, 2023. Billy Napier walks into the coach's office on campus. Gators had 5 games left in the regular season, lost all 5, gave up 43 points, 39 points, 52 points, 33 points, and 24 points to a team with no quarterback. The final game of the season that the Gators won, they gave up 39. So all these questions about offense, I welcome them. Are you sure you need 2 offensive line coaches? I don't know. Billy seems to think so. Do you need help calling plays? Billy doesn't seem to think. Whatever. The offense kind of wasn't really the issue, folks, and we spent all our time looking over, I don't know, line up correctly on defense, tackle, things like that. So all of this in the background, it's just a really bizarre situation for a great program. I want to welcome on right now from Swamp 247. It's Graham Hall. Graham, how are you today?
Doing well, Chuck. Thanks for having me. Hope all is well with you.
It is. I'm not even a Florida fan. I'm not a Bull Gator. I'm angry about how my money's being spent. No. I just look at what this program has been for 40-ish years, and I'm a little put off by it. And then I hear his comments how now we have my systems and processes in place. Now I'm going to take a little bit off my plate. And I'm looking at that army of assistants wondering, how did you still have too much on your plate when you outspent an unlimited budget? Like, am I being too critical and pointed here?
I don't think you're being too critical or pointed. No, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. The expectations at Florida make it so that everyone around their country, whether it's Florida fans or people watching this program that won two national championships in the span of 3 years, had a great coach, obviously, and Steve Spurrier, Urban Meyer, they're looking at why this program can't figure it all out. And I think it's, a higher ceiling than some other programs, not to, put other programs in a bad light, of course. I think it's led to questions about why a guy who had a ton of success at Louisiana and Napier hasn't been able to really figure it out with all the resources that Florida can afford from the academic options. I mean, certainly a desirable place to go, but as we've seen in the last couple of years, academics may matter less to athletes going to school than they ever have. On top of the coaching structure, which you just hammered home, I mean, I think that there are certainly some questions about the coaching staff setup, how many members are part of that support staff army, why they can't, aid taking some off the coach's plate. Those are all reasonable criticisms. I do think that what you said in the beginning, the optimism from Billy Napier, from talking about the systems finally being in place to when he said on signing day that this is the deepest the roster has been in his 3 years at the helm, I don't know what to make of those statements. I'm not going to say they're false. I'm also not going to say they're true just yet, because I think much of what it comes down to evaluating that, it's going to be determined by this upcoming season. And that's why it's so difficult to, I think, gauge whether they're accurate statements or not, because so much of the question surrounding Florida is how are they going to handle that brutal gauntlet of the 2024 season. That's going to make it really hard to evaluate the health of this program, because they may be more talented, they may be deeper, and it still may result in a losing season. And I think that's kind of what is another aspect of some of these external criticisms.
Love me some Trey Wilson. I've said I think he's quicker and slipperier than even he's fast, and he's pretty dang fast. He's just a really fun-looking player. Beyond that, tell me what maybe we'll be thinking about the receiver group post-spring game.
I think a lot of young guys are going to have to step up, whether they're Arliss Boardingham at tight end, Hayden Hansen at tight end, two guys who played a lot more last season. Obviously, they get Keon Zipperer back, a guy who suffered a season-ending injury, missed all of last year. That is going to be a huge factor in the passing game for Florida if they're able to make further improvements from an offensive standpoint, because you know how much Billy Napier likes to use 12-man. That is going to be huge. You have to replace Trevor Etienne. Is it going to be Treyon Webb who steps up? Are they going to get Cam Carroll back at any point before the start of the season, before the start of the fall? I don't know about that. A guy who suffered a devastating injury a year ago. Well, how healthy is he going to be? Because they're going to certainly need as many options in the backfield as possible. And then at receiver, you mentioned Trey Wilson had a really good freshman year. They're going to have to rely on a lot of underclassmen to step up once again, whether it's Andy Jean, Aiden Mizell, two highly touted guys now entering their sophomore year who really didn't see the field as much last season as people expected them to. Their improvements are going to be a big hinge factor, I guess we can call it that, on whether Florida's offense is capable of outscoring other teams. Now, I agree most with your point that as much criticism as Napier has got for the play-calling element, Florida's offensive element, that's not the big problem here in Gainesville. There's a reason they identified the defensive coaching staff as the one that needed to be overhauled in the offseason, adding guys like Miles Graham, LJ McCray, Joey Slackman via the transfer portal, several other names like that. Those are the ones that really should be under the microscope, in my opinion, because it doesn't matter if Florida can go out there and score 40 if you're allowing 52 points a game.
You mentioned one name there that I'm glad, because you reminded me of a kid that I heard from like multiple folks around the program. This kid might be like freaky, freaky good. Arliss Boardingham. What's the ideas after the 23 season now being complete? What's the idea for him? Because he was a guy that like there were some exciting moments for him.
Yeah, he just gets open at an extremely high rate. Very good athleticism for his size, has an enormous wingspan, has improved as a run blocker, which I think is one of the big issues for him, has been above average as a pass blocker, but certainly that is something that is going to, I think, determine how much they're able to put him on the field. If he's able to do that, he's going to be a factor in the passing game. It's going to be able to have another wide out there that can complement these underclassmen wide receivers. I think that you talk a lot about potential when you talk about him, and some people have even used, not to get people overly excited or build the hype, but some people have used Kyle Pitts as a comparison to him when it comes to his athleticism. Not as big as Kyle Pitts, let me say that. And I don't know if he really has a Kirk Cousins up there who's going to target him at a high rate. But this is a guy that I think a lot of people are hoping that heading into year three, he can make another leap. Very raw still, didn't play the position much at the high school level, so still some things to learn, but a lot of potential, and I do think he's going to be more of a factor in the passing game this season.
Now, I knew where one of the guys who was talking about Boardingham said he's not 6'6", but think of some of the things with Kyle Pitts that weren't traditionally like he's a tight end hooked on the right tackle's hip. And that's some of the ideas they had last year. All right, flip it around. Let's talk defense. Lagway's not the only hyped up freshman. You mentioned McCray. Talk about freshmen. I mean, if you're 18 and you're in camp, they're going to use you. Talk about McCray, Miles Graham, et cetera.
Yeah, I think with McCray, he's kind of in between positions right now where he's going to be able to play that F position for Florida, kind of one of those edge guys who's going to be able to rush the passer at an extremely high rate. But I think long-term, you're talking about a 5-tech guy, a guy who's going to play more inside, just given his frame, how big he is. You know, if Arliss Boardingham isn't 6'6", I certainly think LJ McCray is right on the cusp of 6'6". I think he's more of a, not to say a long-term guy, but year one is not going to be the best determinant of how good he can be at the college level, and that's to be expected, right? How tough is it to come in as a defensive lineman and contribute year one? I know there's opportunity available in Gainesville, and that's going to, I think, lead to him seeing the field, but certainly you're going to have to wait a couple years to see how good this guy really can be, in my opinion. Miles Graham, I give him a lot of credit, because in this day and age, legacy is hardly a factor when it comes to choosing a college program, especially if your father is Ernest Graham, a guy who was beloved 2 decades ago in Gainesville. Miles Graham embraced those expectations. He committed to Florida extremely early, and his recruiting process has just been very impressive already to the start of spring camp, but it's extremely early. I think one of the reasons that he may play more this season than a guy like LJ McCray is the lack of depth at linebacker. You know, you lose Scooby Williams to Texas A&M. Several other guys in the roster have not really lived up to internal expectations. Shamar James is coming off an injury. It's going to lead to, in my opinion, a first-year guy in Miles Graham seeing the field at a higher rate. And then certainly, you know, the transfer additions that they made, shoring up the third level of the defense, adding DJ Douglas, Triquez Bridges, Asa Turner. That was a unit, the safety position, that has really struggled the last couple of years. And you talk about the amount of explosive plays Florida gave up. Covering at a higher rate was certainly a premium for this team in the offseason, and they added some veterans there to go along with these promising underclassmen.
Real quick, we're going to rely on your medical degree. You mentioned Shamar James there. I think he's the best player on the team. Quarterbacks don't count because they're always so important, but I think Shamar James is just a fabulous player. How is he?
Yeah, he's getting close. I do think he's going to be back by the end of spring camp. I think it's wise to not rush him back, of course, but also this is a guy who doesn't really need to go through a lot of the early stage of spring camp. If you can get him back by that spring game on April 13th, I think that everyone would be overjoyed. Billy Napier was a little bit vague on that first day of November when he suffered that dislocated kneecap. He said it was an injury that Shamar had suffered before in high school. It hadn't required surgery back then. This one needed surgery to repair. Anytime a guy has dealt with that issue before, I think you need to be a little bit more cautious with them coming back to make sure it doesn't become a long-term thing. And you said it, his talent level, I think, makes it so that he can just pay attention in the film room, be out there in non-contact portions in practice, and still be able to pick up everything. And there's a lot of continuity here for this Florida defense, which may sound like as if, oh, that's not great for a unit that wasn't very good last year. But when it comes to learning the intricacies, I think he's farther ahead than just almost anyone else at the position. Derek Wingo probably gets the nod over him. I think that he's going to be back at some point in spring camp, but no one should be in a rush to get him on the field from Billy Napier to the training staff, just knowing how good he can be if he stays healthy and is just ready to go by fall camp.
Okay, you mentioned him. I just want to get a quick word on Keon Zipper, because he is one of those kids that had an actual real red shirt back in 19, played all the games in 20, and then he was a redshirt freshman in 21. So he still has eligibility, and he's coming back from an injury as well, right?
Yeah, his last season, he suffered a torn ACL, took a while to heal. I don't know if he had a setback or not, but missed all of 2023. Yep. A guy who's a little bit undersized at the tight end position, but the consideration for him, how he was regarded ahead of last season, that he was the best pass-catching option at the tight end position. He's probably the quickest one on the field. Now, the big question is, how much has he lost? Has he lost anything from an athleticism standpoint from suffering that injury? Is he going to be fully ready to go 100% by the start of fall camp? You know, you get him back in a limited capacity right now, easing him back in, a guy with experience, no need to really rush him. But I do think that given the lack of overall experience at the position, what he was capable of, and when I say most capable pass catcher, you know, he had, 17 receptions in 2022, and certainly a guy who didn't tear it up, but he was able to get in the end zone a couple of times. Yep. And make guys miss in the open field, which is so tough for the tight end position. So I do think that he's someone that can contribute in the passing game, but I also hate to say maybe Florida's going to give a deeper look, really, at the younger guys in Arliss Boardingham and Hayden Hansen. Hayden Hansen, I think he's really improved as a pass catcher, has added to his frame, gotten him better as a run blocker and pass blocker as well. So he's going to maybe find himself behind a couple of third-year guys, and you always know how that can motivate someone. We'll have to see how the tight end position shakes out for Florida.
Yeah, man, it seems like it was 5 minutes ago. It was him, Gamble, and Pitts, and I was like, that's how a tight end depth chart's supposed to look. And then all these years later, he still has one more go-around, so I'm hoping for good things. Friend, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Always my pleasure. Y'all take care up there.
All right, Graham Hall, Swamp 247. So he's still around. There, like Brandon Turnage was sort of the same way, and he transferred again, which no commentary, it's just it's a fact. But Zipper, he didn't. And there is a profile of a player. I just talked about him, and I've been kind of working my way through a topic here, a segment with a lot of SEC and ACC examples of it, and he was one of them, and like I said, Brandon Turnage is another. But where you had kids show up and they're the ones who are just about to be out of eligibility, comma, finally, another comma, and it is just about to get a little bit easier for high school seniors to get scholarships. There was a squeeze down because with the portal, everybody knows you'd rather go out to, you know, Minnesota and get a 20-year-old tackle than an 18-year-old at high school. Go get the Golden Gophers guy. He's played in 9 games already. But this trickle-down meant that previously 18-year-old high school kids, good enough to get a scholarship as a freshman to, like, Division I, they were getting squeezed out to Division II. The Division II kids, now, you know, like, it was a boom, 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 boom to some kids just not getting scholarships anymore. This is going to filter out. This is going to filter through. And so there's a bigger picture to that. And I'll talk – in fact, you know, I'll come back and talk a little bit more about – Zipper or a few other examples of it, but it's about to loosen up. So the entire landscape, there's going to be a huge number of players out of basically you're going to have 2 or 3 classes worth of players all lose eligibility in the same year, basically. So all of a sudden there's going to be a lot of roster spots open. And that is nigh. That's actually going to start after this season. And it's going to take about a year for it to happen. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's a great sell for the kids that'll listen to it. There's a lot of them that want to ask about NIL. They don't want to ask about what you're NFL players have done. But I think it's much more important how you develop players than how much NIL you give.
Kirby Smart. And he is, given his experience, Kirby's experience as head coach is that, yeah, they want money right now. And used to be, can you put me in the NFL so that in, you know, 3 years, because I'm that good, or 4 years or even 5 years, can you put me in the NFL because I want to do all the things that you can when you're in the NFL? And Kirby said that that's what folks are wanting. Like, the when I talk to kids now, it's about now money. It was about, can you put me in the NFL? Now it's about, when can I get paid today? There is not, this isn't a character flaw. We're dealing with 17, 18, 19-year-olds, okay? So it's not a character flaw. They're kind of acting the way you're supposed to at that age, which means they can't be relied on for things like depth of character, maturity, like their brains haven't formed all of that stuff yet. Long-term, all for one, sort of, no. That's not really their mindset. A kid that age, especially, now I don't know the backgrounds. There are plenty of kids that when you go on scholarship, I mean, it frees up money and then things are fine with your family. Some kids are rich. Johnny Manziel, his family is rich. Some kids are not rich. But for a typical 17 or 18-year-old, tell that kid, under the current system, you can make $200,000 a year in name, image, likeness right now, today, as a freshman. And Kirby says, well, now you have to get to Georgia first, and then once you'll make your money once you're in the program. And he's like, well, at this other SEC program, I get it immediately. So that's the first step in this, is I want that money now. Nick Saban was talking to Congress about the dangers of this and where we are and them becoming employees and all the money involved, and was on camera. You can go back and watch it. And I don't know that it was a real good thing, but it's what he chose to do. And he is talking about how the current environment is what kind of drove him away. And all of that's accurate. But the issue, the big challenge, is the other half of the equation. Like, half of this, you've got adults. The other half of this, you've got college-age players. And if you have a 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old who, under the current system, can either go to Georgia and Bama and kind of wait in line, and then when they show up, okay, there's all the money like you told me. Or they can go to maybe a lesser program that needs more immediate help and says, we'll give you more immediate money. They can do that. All right, between those two scenarios, a lot of kids are choosing the second scenario, where I got my money now. What Nick Saban was talking about, what Kirby Smart is lamenting, when I say the big challenge, the big issue, if you have a kid who can get $200,000, I'm just picking the figure, and you tell him, as the adult in their room, like you're on that side of the table, and you look over to the side of the table with all the kids on it, and you say, you can get that $200,000 right now, and you can get it next year, and then you can get it your final year, and then you're off to the rest of your life, whatever that is, NFL, job, you know, whatever. But you can get that for each of these 3 years, and then you're done. But in 20 years, there's not going to be a college football for an unborn kid, someone who won't be birthed until 2026. In 20 years, there won't be a college football for that kid. So what we need you to do is agree to a system where we limit your income by about 35% of what it is right now. But you ensure that this unborn kid, 2 decades from now, there will be some. Folks, Chuck, we need you to take 35% less money right now so that a broadcaster 2 decades from now, there'll be something left for him. That's a hard sell to a 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old. Now, by the way, they need to say yes. I'm just telling you, they're not gonna. So this is the kind of thing where it's got to be forced somehow, and that's going to be litigious and drawn out, whatever else, but you are not going to be able to convince 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds who, in some cases, not every, in some cases, this just became the financial windfall, the end of the rainbow, the pot of gold for their family tree. Now, that's dangerous and all kinds of issues on its own. But if mom and dad or just mom, has always had a clock-in job and behind on the rent, not the mortgage, the rent. If it's always been tough every day that you've ever understood what money is, no. Let me tell you about this new system where you get a lot less, but it safeguards everybody. See, that's what you're faced with right now. That's your big challenge. And I can't look at the kid and say, I expect you to feel differently about it. But it really is the right answer. And being able to convince them or unionize or collectively bargain, that's what you need.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford, we are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.